number one, I'd say don't start a hardware business to anyone. And then the second thing I'd say is that you don't need money to do and get an MVP set up anymore, in my opinion. You have Google and you have a good passion for something, you're going to find a way to get it done.
Hello there. Welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, we're chatting to Adam Dalton, the co-founder of Robotify. This is an incredibly unique story and a unique company. They're teaching over 100,000 students in 100 countries how to code using virtual robots. Now, if that's not the most unique intro we've had this year, I don't know what is. It's an incredible chat. We're going to hear how they started in secondary school, bootstrapped it their entire way through college, worked second jobs, did everything they could to keep the company going, to now their success, where they just announced they've partnered with Steve Wozniak, who, as we all know, is one of the co-founders of Apple. It's an incredible story. Quick thank you to my partners for this season, Kiri's Car Store, that's carstore.ie. We'll chat a little bit more about them later. Here is my chat with Adam Dalton, the co-founder of Robotify. Adam, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's good to be here. I've seen a lot of good stuff about you online, and it's good to be able to chat.
Good stuff, thankfully. Look, it's great. It's brilliant. Like, I've been following you guys for a while, and you just keep popping up and up and up. It's been a wild journey for you.
It absolutely has. I think, you know, we've kept the head down for quite a while and kind of, you know, maybe it's cliche to say stealth mode, but certainly at least kind of not lifting our head above the water, just keeping our head down and working hard and kind of building the product and building our relationships in the background. And I suppose, you know, one thing which has been interesting in recent months has been the a little bit more attention. I think more people, especially in the Irish ecosystem, becoming aware of us. And I suppose from where we started, it's nice to see now to be able to finally kind of lift our head above and get our name out there a bit more. And I think people are starting to notice what we're doing. So,
are they noticing? What are you building?
Yeah, so basically, for anyone that doesn't know what Robotify is, we're a virtual robotics and coding startup, and our software is aimed at kids currently. We've got basically a kids ed tech platform where students can control a variety of different robots, except the thing is you never have to buy a robot at all. So it's a fully virtual robotics experience that happens in a browser. And so we're in now over 100 different countries. We've got over 100,000 kids on our platform. It's been a wild journey. And I suppose always the focus is how do we get more access to the world's best robotics? And so the way that we figured that would be the best way to do that would be through the power of really good virtual simulations, so we can deliver cost-effective, accessible, and equitable access to the world's best robotics, no matter where you are on any device.
That's serious. I just want to pull that back up for a second, because you said it there so humbly in true Irish style. 100 countries and 100,000 students.
Yeah.
That's massive. That's unbelievable.
It feels like we're only scratching the surface, to be quite honest with you, Gary. It's something, it's certainly, I'd say, for me anyways, and it's probably a thing between our team, myself and my co-founder, Evan. We started a company when we were in secondary school in Raheny, and I suppose one thing that's always been really important to us, and probably one of the reasons why we've kind of kept our head down and not really publicized what we're doing, is we never like to give ourselves, I suppose, a pat on the back. We always feel like there's more work to be done, like there's another challenge that's been set for us to go and achieve, or there's been numerous occasions where you feel like you've made a big bit of progress, and then whatever it is in this industry, you always feel like you have to go again and go for more. So
what is that? That's an entrepreneur thing. It's so weird you said that, because just this morning I've come from having a coffee with a friend of mine, another entrepreneur, and we had that exact debate. What is that you always kind of go, okay, that's nice, but you know what's nicer? Double that. What is that drive?
I think a lot of people would think, you know, in terms of In terms of kind of money and the money associated with being an entrepreneur, I think a lot of people from the outside will kind of say, you know, it's commercially driven, it's greed or it's whatever. And, you know, for me, it's a very, very physical experience. I almost feel compelled to move forward. And I think it's, to be fair, actually, I think it's quite an addictive trait. And I think it's a lot deeper than what a lot of people think. You know, it's actually probably a disorder, you know, like I'd go as far as saying that it's, you know, it's like any addiction where you just want more once you kind of get in. And I almost thank God my addiction is entrepreneurship. Because, you know, obviously you're using it in a positive way. And I think not only is there that element of, you know, there's a genuine physical reaction to wanting to move things forward, there's also a huge thing in the mix, which is passion. I think for anyone who's in entrepreneurship or who's building a business they feel passionate about, that just makes that addiction to move forward 10 times stronger. And like, all you have to do is look at sporting legends like Roy Keane. You know, I'm a United fan, and for my sins, but anyways, I'm a United
fan. I feel
fan
your pain. Don't worry, I feel your pain.
And like, all you have to do is look at the way Keane reacted every time they won a trophy. It was always about what's next. I think that's because, you know, certainly people in sports, they're addicted to winning, they're addicted to going again. And I think for entrepreneurship, it's very similar. You know, it's not. It's look. Sometimes you'll get those driven by greed and money, but actually you'd know those people straight away and fairly quickly. When you're in a room with someone who feels that passion, it's a very powerful thing. But it's certainly, I think there's certainly a lot. It's a lot deeper than what meets the eye, if that makes sense.
Well, you explained that much more eloquently than I stumbled over it about an hour ago. So yeah, I'm just fascinated by it because, you know, it's just in you. And I just, sometimes it's hard to explain to people what that is. And it's not like a dissatisfaction or an unhappiness with the current situation. It's just this desire in you to do more. That's really well put. How did this start though? Because it's such an unusual idea.
Yeah, so I suppose, you know, for many startups, you're looking at, you know, maybe they've been around for 18 months or 2 years and have reached this stage. And this story goes back a lot further. Myself and Evan Darcy, my CTO and co-founder, we met each other in St. Paul's in secondary school on the first day of school. And we sat next to each other in science. And we always used to have a bit of crack throughout the years, always a little bit competitive with each other with regards to results. And we always used to do little projects together. So starting in science, we'd do, I don't know, let's say we'd do like a submission together for the young scientist, or we'd work on a project. But over the years, we kind of increasingly realized that the way that we'd like to do that is commercially, and not only to do, you know, something that's going to benefit people, but also do that in a way that's going to benefit, I suppose, us eventually from, you know, hard work. So we were always very entrepreneurial, quite driven. And back in fourth year of school, if you know the junior entrepreneur program, I think Jerry Kennelly was involved with it for a while and set it up. But basically, obviously, you start your own mini business. And around the time, I was learning how to code. I was always kind of very creative kid, always coming up with these imaginary stories and these fantasy, you know, worlds and this big imagination. But I'm terrible at drawing, I can't play music, I'm terrible at singing. I'm just dreadful, which is funny considering my brother and my mom are great singers. But I literally had no creative outlet. I played football, again, not very creative. I was a center half. And I suppose for me then, when I found coding, it was just this immediate, like, wow, I can create something from scratch. And I was building all these, whether it was a mod for Minecraft, a new website, you know, loads of different things. I made a calculator one time, which was, for me, very exciting. And like, you know, for me, it's like, this is unbelievable that I can create these things. So I started learning how to code because one of our teachers was, he was just an amazing guy. His name was Michael O'Neill, and he was a guidance counselor lovely man, an incredible guy. And he, you know, he was probably in his 60s and he was just teaching these on his own time, teaching some of the students in the school how to code after school. It was voluntary and there was about 600, 700 people in the school. And every single Thursday after school, three people who used to show up to this coding class and I was one of them. And so learned how to make websites and then taught in fourth year that it might be really interesting rather than start a tuck shop or, you know, something like that, that we would, I suppose, try our best to start a coding company, teaching the kids in the first year, in first year how to code. And turns out it was actually a massive success. So I think we made more revenue than any other company in the school history. And we essentially kind of managed to have a huge success story teaching these first years how to code. But kind of similar, going back to that first kind of piece of conversation we had there, is we weren't necessarily happy, because what we found was that there was a certain amount of kids who just got it and they just loved the coding of the websites. But, you know, for your everyday student, for your sporty student or your gamer or your whatever, you know, it didn't fit and it wasn't obvious. And so myself and Evan, the following year in fifth year, started obviously to leave and start cycling. And we just thought to ourselves, okay, you know, how could we do, which, you know, obviously was very successful, what we did the previous year, except do it in a way that was different and that brought more people in and brought more people along. So we did a lot of research and we saw this was way before anyone was really talking about coding in a big way, 2014, 2015. We saw these coding kits coming in from China and we were like, wow, this could be cool if we did like a robot. And the kids, the objective was that instead of the website, right, they code a robot and then they see and they have this physical experience. So we did, and we literally scraped together every last penny we had. And basically what we did was we went around and I think it was 80 quid for the 8 weeks or something. We had to give a 20% deposit, 20% deposit, I think it was, or 25% or something like that. So it was 20 quid we took up front and we literally used the deposit money to pay for the parts. And if the parts didn't arrive in time, we weren't doing robotics week one. So we basically scrambled together, got all these bits and pieces in, and we ran the course, and kind of lo and behold, it was a huge success. And when a student could see their code on a screen that was so abstract and so confusing, just buzz around on a table, it was just like that. Like it was immediate that they understood what coding was. And so from there, then, you know, I'm sure we'll go into it, but we went on a big journey of how do we ultimately keep this beautiful thing at the center of our business, but try and solve some of the problems associated with rolling it out. And I suppose through that mission, through that philosophy, we've landed where we are today.
And what happened then when you finished Leaving Cert? Did you go, okay, I'm going to go back now and see where this takes me? Or did you go to college? Well, what happened?
So myself and Evan kind of felt that Robotify had real legs, and we were really, really happy with the business name. We just felt that it had an identity. We felt that it just had a feeling that this is something that's too good to be ignored. And kind of in our naivety, we had decided that we were going to start an international hardware company from Dublin, with obviously no finance and no funding and no experience. And when we started the business, I always tell people, it's like, I was the coder and Evan was the business guru. And at the time we started a business, Evan was working in a sweet shop and had never written a line of code in his life, and I was obviously doing the website stuff and kind of the coder that was building the curriculum. And over the years it became very clear that his passion was building great software and hardware, and my passion was building great relationships. And
so it switched over
and so we were still pursuing it in sixth year, even throughout our Leaving Cert studies, but we had kind of strategically made the decision that we would join DCU together. A couple of reasons why we felt it was going to be a good environment for us to succeed in. From everything we saw, it looked like the most forward-looking, forward-thinking university from an entrepreneurial standpoint. Saw a lot of good stuff coming out of DCU, and being Northsiders, I think it was an attractive proposition for us location-wise. Just got a good vibe on campus and felt like a place where stuff is happening. So I actually chose to do a business degree, business studies in DCU, and Evan chose to do a mechatronic engineering degree. So obviously switched roles from when we started. And my thoughts were between, will I do computer science or will I do business? And my thoughts were, look, I want to build the business while I'm in college. So do a degree that's going to be easy to do in the background rather than put me through 40, 50 hours a week of hard, heavy labor, which turned out in the end to be a very good decision. But when it happened, so we chose to go to DCU together. So we focused, get the Leaving Cert. But even at that, we were absolutely hooked on the business. Like, I remember, fun little story, the week before the Leaving Cert, we had decided that summer we were going to run a summer camp. And this was going to be, you know, a big earner in the summer to be able to run robotic summer camps. And so the week before the Leaving Cert, I designed all these flyers, really nice, clean, got them all printed. And literally 5 days before our first exam, myself and Evan spent the whole day walking around to different schools in the different area by foot, and handed in about 1,000 brochures or 1,000 flyers into 4 or 5 different schools in the local area to try and recruit, you know, kids for the summer camp. And this was 5 days before the Leaving, so our parents were probably looking at us thinking we're absolutely mad, or they might have had a different opinion in a different way. But I remember going home that evening absolutely knackered, being in town from 7:30, walking on our feet the whole day to give out flyers and until the evening. And I remember then having to go and study for my history exam. I actually fell asleep at the desk when I was supposed to be studying. But it was always central, obviously, Robotify. Luckily, did get our course and did well in the Leaving, and then our journey in DCU began, which was kind of the next phase of our journey, you know.
We take a quick break from today's chat to talk about our partners for season 6, kierisCarStore.ie. That's carstore.ie. They're an incredible family-owned Irish brand, and that is why I love partnering with them. They have an incredible service. As the world's reopening, you might need a new car, you might need to trade up the old one, or you might even need to get your first car. Go to carstore.ie. You can search over 700 cars and you can do it all online. That is the beauty here. 24/7, you go online, you pick out the car. I like that one. Okay. You can then book a virtual viewing. You can do it through your phone. You don't have to leave the house. You can go, okay, I like that one. We're going to buy it. The beauty is they'll deliver it anywhere in Ireland for you. And if you don't like it, you can return it. No hassle. Go check them out. They're incredible people. It's a brilliant business. It's carstore.ie, or you can click the link in the description below. Now back to today's chat. It's incredible strategy from the two of you at that young age to know this is what we're going to do. We're going to choose our college and we're going to build this together. Like, how did you even get to that stage? Was it just something that organically developed between you?
Yeah, I think it's probably naive as well. Like, I wouldn't recommend it if I wouldn't, you know, as in I think we've been awfully lucky with regards to how it kind of panned out. I certainly wouldn't be saying, like, if you're starting a business with your friend, definitely choose the same college. Like, do you. And I think it just fell nicely for us. And to be fair, we were probably quite starry-eyed with regards to what our plans were for the future and thought, let's go for this together. You do engineering, I do business, and we'll merge those two and turn it into something great. And, you know, we both got in and eventually actually, you know, didn't pan out that way. I did manage to finish my degree last year, which is an achievement I'm actually very proud of. And Evan actually dropped out of mechatronic engineering in year two, and something he's very proud of as well. So it's been an amazing kind of experience, but certainly wouldn't be something I'm saying to do with every young entrepreneur. And I've actually had a few, which is brilliant to see, you know, a few young entrepreneurs ask for advice and different groups. And I'm always happy to take a call just to give them advice. And, you know, they're asking when we go to the same college, like, look, if it suits you, yes, but no, it should be about you, number one, and then about the business second, because we were just lucky that we kept Robotify going. There was many moments where you thought it's over, you know,
yeah.
And it was just pure probably perseverance and ignorance that it kept going.
I think you need that naivety though, because if you didn't have it, you'd never start. There's a million reasons not to do something and a million kind of, oh, these problems are too big. If you don't have that naivety, you'll never start. And in college then, you continued to build Robotify up on the current trajectory. Were you doing camps or what way were you building it?
Yeah, so we actually had decided then to go with the hardware option, and we built a DIY robotics kit. We literally had boxes, corrugated, double, triple corrugated boxes, and coming in from China. We built them. We still have some actually in the office. Absolutely top quality, living way beyond our means. Yeah. The boxes are like €7 or €8 box. And they're like Apple quality boxes. One thing was always important to us. We got these inserts that were like foam cutouts, and we had all the bits and pieces sourced. We custom 3D printed our chassis on our robot car, and we built a product called Robotify Alpha. So the whole thing was about product development and product engineering, and eventually we had this Robotify Alpha unit that would be able to be shipped in kit form, and kids could essentially buy the kit and learn how to code. So we paired that with like a curriculum. So it was kind of DIY robotics, and we built that. And I remember we sold, we came up with a deal with Make Shop in Dublin, which used to be Trinity owned, like a hardware shop. We used to do courses and outreach courses with them, and we'd do courses in the community and camps and after school clubs. And then we wanted to shift our business model to selling a box to units. So we set up a Shopify store and started trying to sell. And I remember this one time, DCU kind of took notice of this, and they got us a piece of PR in the Irish Times. And I remember the reaction was like, I remember the article was going live, let's say on a Wednesday morning. And I remember waking up that Wednesday morning to the article being live and feeling absolutely sick to my stomach. Two reasons: I might have had a few drinks the night before. And then secondly, I also saw like 10, 15 orders come through for our box product. And I think it was $80, like making no money off it. Like there was no margin in it. But just that feeling of crap, this is real. We had no, maybe I shouldn't admit it, but we didn't have much of the safety certifications done either. And we were just kind of giving it a go. And I remember we packaged every single one of them in much cheaper boxes than what we had put on our website, because we couldn't afford the big ones. And we literally hand delivered to each one of our customers every single single product. So that's kind of how the business took kind of form over that next few years. And then we were trying to raise money, and the ethos was like, how do we sell more robots or make more robots? And I think we probably underestimated how much we needed to actually scale a hardware company.
So this was kind of keeping you going through college. The 2 years working as full time, and obviously that's very labor intensive and kind of manpower and money intensive. And so how did you fund then kind of the move to the next stage?
So we actually had, both of us kept part-time jobs during, it was a very challenging few years. Evan worked in a bar that was local to his house. And obviously his mechatronic engineering degree was ridiculous in terms of time commitment. And then also I kept part-time jobs throughout college and did a bit in Airbnb, had, you know, different jobs in marketing. I was working in the Digital Marketing Institute for a while and always kept myself busy with work, whether that was consulting, contracting or, you know, part-time here and there to just keep money in the back pocket. Obviously, luckily, both of us live in Dublin, so thank God that we have our parents' house. Obviously, wouldn't have been able to afford rent in Dublin, especially the way it is now. And
I think they're the important things to note, though. I think people think, oh yeah, I'm going all in on the business now, and you know, then it's like, oh cool, yeah, what are you gonna eat? Yeah, exactly. You know, so it's great to hear real stories like that, because I think, you know, entrepreneurship is very glamorized, and you know, it's kind of seen as like, oh, this cool thing to do, you know, it's the new bin in a band, but it's tough craft, and you'll probably have to do a lot of stuff along the way that mightn't be directly involved in the business just to survive.
Yeah, exactly. And I think from our perspective then, so it was very heavy involvement, and we used to just do everything using Google low cost, anything built on revenue. And it got to the stage, to be quite honest with you, Gary, where we were thinking of giving up because there was no, there was nothing that Robotify was doing other than felt like it was taken away from our lives. You know, it felt like it was taken over, and every spare moment we had, we were working on the business and it wasn't going anywhere. And, you know, it gets grim when you're looking at that bank balance and it's just not moving. And, you know, no matter what you're trying, it's just not going forward. And so we came to a decision actually that I think it was the end of second year or the end of first year, we said to ourselves, look, this hardware stuff isn't working, but this isn't working. Robotify is a hardware company. So, you know, let's give ourselves 3 months and almost kind of give ourselves 3 months to just to decide whether this company was legit and whether this company was going to be what we wanted it to be. And luckily, by the end of that 3 months, we figured out who we were and what we wanted to achieve in our life. But it wasn't easy, so it's kind of not rosy. And then luckily enough, we got introduced to some great people through the DCU networking, the Ryan Academy, came along our now chairman, Andrew Murphy, who's a kind of ex-entrepreneur in healthcare, really was looking to get into ed tech and was able to give us advice and bring together one of the ideas that shifted the dial forward for us big time, which was essentially rather than sell robots in a kit, if we could build some software to control these robots remotely, then potentially there's an opportunity to build a software business around that, and then so on and so forth. So it wasn't easy, and we kept ourselves going and we kept ourselves self-financed. But I'd argue today, number one, I'd say don't start a hardware business to anyone. And then the second thing I'd say is that you don't need money to do and get an MVP set up anymore, in my opinion. And you really don't. You have Google and you have a good passion for something, you're going to find a way to get it done.
I love that. I say that to people all the time. I think I'm bonkers, but I agree with that exactly the same. People use money as a barrier to start. And like you said there, Google, you know, there's literally every single tool you can think of now exists in some sort of freemium or tenner a month or whatever it is. Like, so that's brilliant advice. I want to go back on one thing you said there. You give yourself a deadline of 3 months to figure things out. I think that's really important. How did having the deadline suddenly clarify things for you and go, right, we have to make a decision here?
It did, absolutely. Because I think one thing that's so important to say is like, oh, there's just so many people out there addicted to this hustle mentality.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's great. Like always, I always, you know, would, I don't know if you want to call it hustle, but you need to know when enough is enough. Like the thing about it is you see so many people and like, I'm no person to judge, but you know a business when you see a business. And you also, it's very easy to tell a founder that's desperate to make something work that's not going to work. And for me, it's really, really important for people not to encourage stupidly naive behavior years down the road when people are actually, when people have real, there's a real cost at stake, real money involved, there's a real passion involved, that it's important to know when the journey is coming to an end. And we felt self-aware enough to say, we've given it a year, 2 years of this pure, utter naivety and great and youthful exuberance. And we've learned a huge amount, but we know now that we have, you know, we're only going to give it another 3 months if it's done by then. And it was legit. If we haven't made anything out of it, it's over. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes I say, would I ever have ended it? I don't know. probably not. But I do think it's really important even to surround yourself with individuals that feel like that they can tell you the truth. Mm. And that's one thing which I value hugely is honesty, being honest. And that's one of the biggest character traits I look for in anyone who works here or anyone who's a friend of mine or is honesty. And if someone is honest and passionate and you've got that support network around you, those people are going to tell you, look, you need to hang up the boots, you know, and I think that's important. Like, it's important, just as important as knowing when to start is knowing when to end.
We'll be back to today's guest in just a second. In the meantime, I want to highlight a great new Irish business. I'm taking a segment each week now in the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast and highlighting a great new Irish business that started in the last 12 to 24 months. Give them a little bit of a shout out, help them on their early stage of the journey. So here is today's Irish business.
Hey Gary, thanks for giving me the opportunity to come and talk about the Coffee Exchange, which is an online coffee marketplace that I set up just under 11 months ago at this stage. But basically it all kind of came about from cafes kind of closing overnight during the first lockdown, and there was a massive shift to buying coffee online. And I was one of those people, so I was buying coffee from different roasters, and I kind of thought to myself, why is there no central location where I can get multiple roasters all in the one spot without having to pay multiple shippings? And I kind of just ran with that. Yeah, so we decided to set up the Coffee Exchange, like I say, just under 11 months ago at this stage, where we have 8 roasters from all over Ireland that and retail a couple of bags of coffee on our website that you can buy and deliver it straight to your door. And since then, we've gone on to add lots of equipment to suit any level of brewing, as well as having a coffee club, which is our subscription. So basically you don't have to worry about running out of coffee again. We'll take a bag of coffee from one of our roasters each month and we will kind of send that out to our subscribers. And yeah, it's kind of been growing from strength to strength and it's brilliant. You can find us at the Coffee Exchange online or coffeex.ie, and probably we're all over Instagram at this stage, _coffee_x. Thanks a million, Gary, and I wish you well with the pod this season.
If you are an Irish entrepreneur and you've started a business in the last 12 to 24 months, reach out to me, contact me via the pod, and I'll do my best to highlight you on season 6 of the Entrepreneur Experiment. Now back to today's chat.
I like that idea of the deadline. I think it's very important because you can drag these things out forever, and it just gives you that sense of peace as well. That sense of, and often you do need just a deadline to go, right, gun to your head, what are you doing? And you know in your gut, probably the hard decision. So what changed in those 3 months?
Well, we did a lot of research, and we found on Kickstarter. So we were going to raise money on Kickstarter, and we found that there was a bunch of these programs and these robotics companies that were way better than we were, like beautiful products, beautiful experiences, more experienced team that were getting really successfully funded. So we were like, oh, this is great. We're just going to go and raise money on Kickstarter. I had worked on a deal with Kickstarter and they were going to put us on the front page in Europe and projects we love. Like, okay, this is a no-brainer. We actually went as far as preparing the entire campaign. We did a promotional video. We did an amazing Kickstarter page and bio. It was class. We modeled it off all the most successful ones. Before we hit send and literally published, like it was a matter of click and publish, and we were good as gold. And we had a look at all those Kickstarter companies to see where they were now.
Yeah,
and
nice.
We found that we're like, oh my God, like most of these guys who got funded like for a huge amount are no longer in existence. Or they're in existence and they're doing very little, because there's obviously something going on here. So we scratched beneath the surface and we found a few problems, and we're like, okay, so robots are great. Like, no educator argues with the fact that they're an amazing way to teach kids how to code. Everyone loves them from that perspective. But there's some real problems here for the customer. And that also mapped to the business, right? From a scalability perspective, that are stopping one-to-one access to these programs at scale. And what we found was that, for example, in a school of 400 kids, the school might only be able to afford 30 robots between those kids. So there's no one-to-one access. There's huge logistical problems with these robots getting kind of carted around the school. There's no formal training on robotics, so you have to have an enthusiast that knows what they're doing. There's no way that kids can bring them home to do homework. Can you imagine giving, you know, a student a shared unit to bring home for homework? It would never come back in one piece. And then the cost, right? The cost of a robot might be $200. So we were like, okay, like clearly there's problems here for the customer, namely cost, access, and efficiency. So we're like, okay, that's great. So how do we do great robots and great experience, but solve all these problems? And so rather than try and recreate reinvent the wheel and create a new robotics company that's just going to have the same problems, because they might bring out a robot that's $80, still too expensive for one-to-one access. As well as that, it's just going to go up and up and up in cost over time as you improve your product, right? So rather than try and just kind of bring something that already exists or you know, I suppose flog a dead horse, I suppose, we decided, let's look at it differently. Let's flip everything on its head and say, let's do all this good stuff and let's solve all these bad problems and try and combine them in a solution. And so we actually came up with the idea of a robot farm. It was actually, to be fair, Andrew Murphy, our now chairman, came up with that idea initially, and myself and Evan then went off and executed. We spent like 11 months literally building a farm of robots, of these pods. We built 30 1x1 meter pods. We built IoT controller software to allow students to control those robots remotely. And we had all these webcams that would stream
deadly
the pod, right? So it would be then, and we built this online learning software for kids to write their code using blocks. And what would happen is you'd book a time on the network. So it'd be like robots as a shared service. So we figured like these robots aren't used at like all the time. Why don't we just have a system where we pay for the robots and then people rent them off us? And the business model was class. Like we had made our money back on the robots after 6 weeks of 50% network usage. We broke each robot up into pods. There was 30-minute pods in it, per each robot, about 48 pods per robot per day, 48 by 30. Initially, it was quite high number of rentable pods per day. There was a 50% kind of capacity usually because you're looking at EU and US time. So really, realistically, there was 24 to 36 pods available per day to book at peak times. Did all the maths, like beautiful model, absolutely unbelievable.
I'm getting excited thinking about it, but yeah, I know it's not your model now. So.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And we built it, we did it, and we built IoT controller software that would allow people to control their robot on our software, on our web app, and see the result of their robot move within under a second, which is like incredible low latency. And it all worked really well. Everyone loved it. And what was the most important thing for us was, can we recreate the same experience of the physical? You know, when I click one code on my laptop and I see a robot moving in Dublin, how does that map to what it was like when we went into the classroom for the first time 3 or 4 years ago? And what was phenomenal to see, Gary, was like, wow, this actually has the same potential to impact that emotional experience as a physical robot. So from there, it was like, okay, you know, this is it. We're going to build the next big generational shift in the world of robotics to allow people to have that feeling without the cost, without the access, the efficiency. And we thought we'd solve the cost issue. Definitely. The model was cost effective. It was probably actually accessibility problem that we ran into next. And so our next big blocker was, okay, we love it. We're school district in the States and we'd like to order 1,000 licenses. And the first thing we did was, absolutely no problem. And the next thing we did was, head in the hand. All of these students are in school at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah. 80% of people want the 10%, 5% of the time. So in order to have an order of anywhere near magnitude of 1,000 students, okay, and this is just one customer, like obviously you want to reach millions, we kind of calculated you need about 900 robots so that there's never any problems with regards to availability on the network. And then what happens is once you increase your robot count, not only do your obviously capital costs go through the roof because you need a bigger location, you need more power, you need more Wi-Fi, you need more units. You'd also have the problem that the latency would go up. So because there's more network usage on the webcam streaming, the reaction times would be far slower. So when a user clicked run code, it would take maybe 5 or 6 seconds to actually compute and see their result. By that time, the young learner had lost their attention span and it wasn't as impactful. So long story short, we looked at the model and one day Evan came in after having a sleepless night because he was scratching his head trying to how to solve this. And the experience was literally a top-down camera looking at this four-wheel robot move around a 1x1 meter box. And Evan was like, hey, if we recorded clips of this robot moving forward, backwards, turning left and turning right, and then recorded an ambient background of the pod, in theory, we could recreate that experience in a virtual world and the students wouldn't know the difference. And so we built it in 4 days we shipped it to a course that's been using the physical robots for 6 weeks. We virtually shipped it, thank God, and ran the virtual simulator, and not a single child in the class noticed the difference between that and the physical.
So they still got that sense of wonder.
And we stopped lying to the kids. We told everyone, and eventually went down this route of how do we build the world's best in-browser simulation.
Love it.
That's where we are now. So we have got the world's leading in-browser physics engine. We do incredible virtualizations of not just $200 robots. We do Mars rover, drones, underwater ROVs to explore shipwrecks. And that's what we bring to students now. And it's still predicated around that central piece that when you control a robot, you feel empowered. Yeah. To understand this technology.
Show me, don't tell me. It's that beautiful way when you see something, it suddenly becomes real and suddenly gets out of your head. And you're like, that sense of wow, that like, oh, wow, deadly. Your story is exactly what the pod is all about. That tweak, 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 keep going, experiment, fail, experiment, fail. Like that's what true entrepreneurship is. It's that ability to keep going. You've been in the news a lot recently. Let's talk about that before I let you go, because I know you have to head off to another meeting now in a second. Why have you been in the news recently?
We recently made the decision. So basically, obviously, I've spoken about our simulation software. I've spoken about our kind of education platform with all of our lessons and our lesson plans. We also have a third part of the business, which is really exciting. Did you ever watch that show when you were younger, Gary, Robot Wars?
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say that. Yeah, I did. On BBC Two, I think, back in the day.
Yeah. It used to be on. Yeah. And basically, we kind of identified this opportunity back in lockdown to essentially create a version of Robot Wars using our simulation technology, but it had to be multiplayer. Mm-hmm. And so, unbelievably, our team turned around a full peer-to-peer multiplayer architectural update to our simulation engine, which would allow users from different parts of the world to be in the same virtual world at the same time.
Oh, incredible.
And it allowed us to build the third part of our product, which is RoboJewel, which is the absolute cherry on top, and an incredibly exciting feature, which is basically the intersection of esports and gaming, or esports and coding, where kids have to use code to get better at the game.
And it's it's like Call of Duty or robots. I'm sold.
Yeah, we don't promote Call of Duty because our kids are younger, but we would be looking at that kind of thing. So look, those three pillars are huge, and we've got a bit of publicity about that. And we just ran our first beta season with a company in Texas called the REC Foundation, who are the biggest robotics competition organizers in the world. And we just had a season of VRAD where kids across America competed in a Python coding league on Mars. Wow. And it was sponsored by NASA. And so basically the kids competed in these multiplayer battles every Wednesday, Thursday and Saturday. We just finished the finals. But kind of long story short, we also realized that our technology has the power to enact change in other people's organizations. And we've built tools in recent months to essentially OEM our technology to enable other partners to use our technology under their brand as a co-brand partner and allow them to build their own lessons and their own virtual robots and their own competitions. And it's been a huge, hugely successful campaign and a hugely successful uptake with some phenomenal partners. And one of those, which you might have seen recently, is the founder of Apple and a hero of mine, Steve Wozniak. And so Steve's company, WozEd, they're a coding and education company in the kindergarten through 12th grade space in the States. And they're going to be using our Robotify-enabled technology as a way to deliver all of their curriculum with virtual robots and virtual competitions for the next, hopefully, many, many years.
That's absolutely huge. Congratulations. That is a huge win for an Irish company based out of Ireland to be making such waves and with such illustrious partners as well. That's absolutely incredible, Adam. Where can people learn a little bit more about Robotify?
Yeah, we just launched a new website, which we're very proud of. It's at robotify.com. So robotify.com. And you'll see stuff about the WAS partnership, RoboJewel, for any parents that are interested. We do have a home user subscription, and it's very, very competitively priced at $50 per year for a kid. So I think it's less than a four-year-old month to get going and get coding. And yeah, we'd love to have anyone on. And the cool thing about the WAS partnership is that we are actually hosting the first ever Robotify expo in a virtual sense in September, and WAS has agreed to be the keynote speaker.
Wow.
On the 23rd of September with me. I'll be interviewing WAS in a keynote panel fireside chat, and we're hoping to announce some more fantastic speakers over the coming weeks. It's a free event focused as a celebration of STEM education and STEM educators. And Steve and myself will be hopefully meeting up and being able to do a good fireside. And so that's robotify.com/virtual-expo. So,
brilliant. What date is that again? Adam, just give us that again.
23rd of September.
Brilliant. Yeah. I'll get back on to you closer to time. We'll plug that again on the pod. That's a little bit exciting, sitting there with him to do a fireside. We'll have to chat again after that. Adam, thank you so much for joining me today on the pod.
Top man, and keep up the great work with the podcast.
What an incredible young entrepreneur. That is one name to put down on your notes of one to watch. And Robotify is a company really going places. That's it for this week. I'll see you back here next Monday. Every Monday, I do the Idea Lab podcast, which is a mixture of trends, ideas, and my story. And we also have a newsletter that goes out every Monday with the podcast. So go to MrGaryFox.com, subscribe, and I'll see you there. I'll see you next Monday. Have a great week.